Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world recording from my parents' basement. We have returned to where it all began. I'm Jake Mintz, and I am seated here in the flesh next to Jordan Schusterman.
Oh, yeah, there we go. There's that proof. Woo! As Jake has given me a pat on the back. It's so good to be with you here, IRL, Jake Mintz. Let's be clear, your parents' basement, right? Because there are probably other baseball podcasts being recorded in parents' basements. That seems like a safe. It seems like a safe. But here's what I'll say about that. I want to defend the concept of the parents' basement being like, oh, ha ha, you're in your parents'. Yeah, parents' basement is usually pretty nice and comfortable, and you get everything you need. And like during COVID, I mean, that's where I was for like the first year of COVID. I was in my parents' basement. It was great. It was awesome.
Don't hate on the parents' basement. Okay, many great things started in a parents' basement. I believe that's where Nikola Tesla invented energy. Mm-hmm. Well, it was in his parents' basement. Well, that's where the Mariners devised the Ty France trade. Yep. It was Jerry DePoto was in his parents' basement. Yep. So greatness can happen in bizarre places.
It can. Now, for official historical record, I do believe that the first ever Barbacast, OG Barbacast, a little over 9 years ago, I believe it was upstairs. I don't know how many. We probably did record some episodes down here at some point. But yes, we are here. We are back in the D.C. area for Thanksgiving. And Jake and I haven't seen each other IRL since All-Star, which is, I think, maybe the longest we've gone and since college. We're going to do a podcast because that's our job. As you can see, if we tweet some clips out in the setting here, we are not lying. I mean, we got the board games back here. We got a treadmill. We got all kinds of goofy stuff here. But we are still going to talk about baseball. Now, on this episode, since we don't have as much, we're going to do some news at the top. We're going to talk about Cody Bellinger, of course, because he's now not on the Dodgers anymore.
What team is he on?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll break at some point while we record this. I doubt it. So we're going to talk about Bellinger. We'll talk a little Gio Urshela playing shortstop for the Angels. I'll talk about Justin Verlander on Zoom. And then we got to open it up, get a little goofy because we're here. And this is what a Barbacast is supposed to be. We're going to do some mailbag questions. And then we will introduce a new segment later on, which I think those who were listening to the original Barbacast will certainly appreciate. But Jake Mintz, let's begin with the biggest news. One of the more, I would say, maybe the biggest non-tender in baseball history. Let's just make crazy statements. I'll say that. I know when Schwarber got non-tendered a few years ago, that felt like a big, like, in terms of like a really famous player who meant a lot to a fan base. Now, that was more of a kind of cold, calculated, as this is in some ways, like, he's not the kind of player that you want to spend X amount of money on. This Cody Bellinger thing, I think it's also funny coming off the Kyle Lewis trade where it was like, oh, he was rookie of the year, and then they trade him, so sad. I'm like, imagine what it's like for Dodgers fans to non-tender Cody Bellinger. Like, this is completely wild. But also, like, yeah, he's been horrific the last two seasons, so I totally understand it in some respect.
Let's walk through the timeline here. Cody Bellinger drafted out of an Arizona high school by the Dodgers, I believe in the fourth round. Mm-hmm. Not a huge prospect, right?
Yeah.
Kind of comes up.
Son of a big leaguer, though.
You know, a big leaguer?
Yeah.
Son of a big leaguer.
Son of a big leaguer. Also, Little League World Series, right? So it's, he wasn't a total nobody, but it's true, right? Fourth round, he wasn't like one of the best high school players in the country.
Everyone's like, wow, he's a first baseman. He's really got a hit. Gets to the big league level. Turns out he's also apparently a center fielder.
A great
and
one.
And kind of just hits right away from the jump and then has that 2019 season where he hits 47 home runs, and most insanely in retrospect, hits 305. Cody, this seems inconceivable now, right? It's like when you see something from before the pandemic, like a video, and you're like, these people look so happy. Cody Bellinger.
These people are sitting really close to each other.
Wow. Cody Bellinger hit 305. Not his on-base percentage, not his slugging percentage.
Yeah.
Okay. His batting average was 305 in 2019. And it was unbelievable at the time because of how hard he swung. It was this corkscrew, like pendulum swing where he was static and then all of a sudden, kapow, bam. And he was this whirlwind of a wonderful player. You and I once had a conversation about what player is most likely to break Barry Bonds' record.
Yeah, both single season and career. It was most on career though, but I mean, again, he had what, 100 and I mean, boy, the ball was just flying out the yard. 111 home runs through his age 23 season. Through three seasons, he had 111 homers, and it's really hard to be even remotely on pace. And it was like, wait a minute, this dude's definitely gonna hit 500. Forget Barry Bonds. Like, he's gonna hit 500 home runs.
This is crazy.
And now here we are.
This guy came up so young, swinging so hard. This can't be real. Guess what? It wasn't real. Over the last three seasons, since the start of 2020, he has hit 203, 272, 376 for a 74 OPS plus. That is 26% worse than the league average hitter. So instead of paying Cody Bellinger an $18 million contract in arbitration, the Dodgers did what seemed impossible 3 years ago, and they non-tendered him. Before we talk about Bellinger's future, let's maybe try and explain for some people why that figure was so high, right? Mm. Because if you have a basic understanding of arbitration, it's you are paid for how well you play, essentially.
After your first three seasons, right? The first, you're on your minimum for the first three seasons, and then you get to say, hey, look what I've done for these first 3 years. That first year arb, usually your fourth season, you say, all right, now, based on these comps, you know, now you're going to actually pay me $10 million instead of $500,000. Right. And that's what happened to Cody Bellinger, because after his third season, he won the MVP and he starts, you know, setting, I think, I don't know if it was a total record, but he makes 11 and a half in his first year of ARB in 2020, which, of course, ended up being a weird season. But then in 2020, he was starting to decline, but he wasn't that bad. And so then it went up again to $16 million in 2021. Right. And then in 2021, it really all fell apart.
But you can't really go backwards in ARB.
Yes, it's almost impossible to go. You have to be in extraordinary circumstances to take a pay cut in arbitration.
And so what that meant is that the Dodgers were presented with, I guess, three options. One was to pay him the $18 million. Mm-hmm. And bring him back, which they did not do. Good call. They could non-tender him, which is what they did, where he immediately becomes a free agent. Or they could have tried to trade him. And I think that it is telling that they were unable to. I'm sure they made the calls. But what team would want Cody Bellinger at $18 million when you know, and while having to give up a player,
yes,
while knowing that in a week's time, most likely...
They will probably say adios. Right.
Exactly.
And now let's also remind everyone that we had this discussion last year about Cody Bellinger, because last year he was due to make about $17 million and he was coming off an even worse season. I know he was more injured than he was this season, but I mean, last year he was like literally the worst hitter in baseball. This season he was merely one of the worst hitters in baseball, but also still playing an excellent center field because he is an amazing athlete. And so that made him I think he was worth one war, 1.2 war, because he was a great defensive center fielder. And he still hit 19 home runs, but yeah, I mean, 78 OPS plus. So they kind of already went through this thinking last year. And to think, okay, well, maybe he can bounce back and get to league average. Maybe he can bounce back. He had a 112 OPS plus in 2020 in the shortened season. Maybe everything in the first 3 years was a mirage. But he shouldn't be one of the worst players in baseball, right? He should be one of the worst hitters in baseball. Like, that swing should not seem possible. That should not. That is just impossible to conceive of. And instead, the Dodgers were like, actually, he actually might just be one of the worst.
Now, how did this happen, right? Yeah. How do you go from MVP to the team that has you saying, nah, we're good in 3 years? Mm-hmm. Now, the moment that stands out in everyone's mind, fairly or unfairly, is that play from the 2020 playoffs where I believe he hit the home run and then did the shoulder bump. The shoulder slam celebration.
Yeah, which you see, not the first player to do that, or the last.
He messed his arm up.
Big time.
Required surgery.
Yeah, it seems like his shoulder was already not doing well, and he decided to essentially re-aggravate the shoulder injury in the silliest possible way, and it fucked him up good, and he had to get surgery.
Now, you've seen a lot of players do that and not get hurt, and it does raise a question about Cody Bellinger as a... how do we do this kindly? Cody Bellinger's level of focus and coachability might not be the highest.
Yeah.
Some on the internet have postulated that Cody Bellinger is a little dumb. I am not going to confirm or deny those rumors, but I will say that at all times he moves around the world like he is wading through a haze of bong smoke. And there is a chance that that type of vibe is maybe not the most amenable to coaching. Now, this is the next point about Cody Bellinger. He's one of the worst hitters in baseball. he could really use a refresh. You know, it would be a good team for him that could really coach hitting and has a lot of reclamation projects. The Los Angeles Dodgers. If the Dodgers, who have unlocked baseball, couldn't fix Cody Bellinger, couldn't get to him, it seems to me that it might be a Cody Bellinger problem.
I agree with that. However, I will also say that this is the nature of the change of scenery paradigm in sports, where even if you are actually in the best scenery, the Dodgers, if you have been there already, you probably do need a change to have some level of wake-up call, and I think that's what they decided, right? And we've seen versions of this. This is just one of the most extreme cases ever because the highs were so just absurdly high. You know, this is the other part of it. It's like, okay, maybe there's some stubbornness. Maybe he's not adjusting. But it's not like he had a rookie season and then he sucked, right? I mean, he was 3 years of just incredible. And so yes, he was striking out a lot, although his strikeout rate also being so low in 2019 is impossible to fathom. But, you know, what are the adjustments that we're talking about here? What I don't know. This isn't my job. At the same time, you know, I watch him and he looks pretty hopeless against certain kinds of pitching. But it's, again, he was so good. It's not like this was an Aristides Aquino situation where it's like, great, dude, you're going to have your fun for 3 weeks and then you're basically going to be out of the league. I mean, this guy was on the top of baseball and now he's, I don't know what he is. And so now, okay, so let's move to the next chapter here.
So a report from Jim Bowden said that, I love this, at least five teams reached out to Cody Bellinger.
Within an hour.
Okay. Which is great. That's like, yeah, I got dumped, but like, you know, like five people. A lot of people would want to go on swipes, dates than they do.
Right.
Jordan doesn't know. Wait, time out. Do you know the correct direction to swipe?
That's what I'm saying.
App?
I think if I want a match, swipe right.
Correct.
Okay. So people swiped right on Cody Bellinger within 5 hours. But I'll make this point. I actually am not sure five teams for a former MVP in the first hour is that impressive. I actually think that might not be a great sign if there are five teams. Because again, we're not talking about taking on 18 million. We're talking about what essentially is just this weird. First of all, he's 27. He's in the Bellinger zone. We talked about it on the last episode, right? He is going to turn 28 next July. He's immediately the youngest free agent. So it's not like this is a dude over the hill, though. I guess it seems like he is in by his years. Ken Rosenthal also reported it seems like him and this is another Boris. Now we have another Boris guy in the market, which is funny. Is that it seems like he's going to want to take a 1 year deal, though, because why would you take, if you believe you can get back to being awesome, then yeah, you're going to take a 1 year deal, try to be awesome, and then be a free agent again, the youngest free agent next year. So I assume that's what they're going to do.
Do you want Cody Bellinger on your favorite baseball team?
This is the other great thing about a free agent like this is, essentially, every team, every fan base is contemplating this. Now, not every front office is contemplating this. As I just said, only five teams called him within an hour. But every fan base, from the Pirates to the Astros and the Cubs and the Mariners and the Yankees, everyone is thinking about this. Fans, do I want him? No. I do not think this needs to be a priority for the Mariners, even though they have said we are still looking for a left-handed hitting outfielder. And ooh. I'm still like, probably not.
It's funny, right? Because as a fan, you plan your offseason months in advance where you're like, all right, these are the players I think I
right,
want.
Right.
This is the holes we need. Here's who's hitting free agency. And then Cody Bellinger shows up and it's like bonus. It's like, I didn't even think of this guy being free agent.
That is the beauty of non-tenders. It is like, oh, hey, here's an additional 60 free agents. Like, oh, okay, cool. Sounds like a plan.
So I will say this. I'm not going to name names. I am in an Orioles-focused group chat.
Yes. This is maybe a more interesting question for the Orioles here.
For the Orioles. And someone in the group chat posted basically, listen, I know he's been bad, but if the Dodgers do non-tender Bellinger, wouldn't it be mind seeing him in orange and black?
And someone else doesn't sound like is super excited about it.
Someone else responded, stop trying to bring in players who suck. And that is kind of my theory and my approach to Cody Bellinger is I think in baseball, we spend too much energy and time looking at the idea of a reclamation project. Mm. just get a good player. Like,
right.
There are many baseball players right. who are already good.
Yes.
They're good right now. Yes. You like it's the idea of a fixer upper house.
Right.
Don't just get a house. Like yes. you don't need him.
But
just get someone who's been saved.
The difference is that great point. Although in this analogy, let's listen, some people can't afford it, but it's baseball. The baseball teams can afford the good baseball players. Right. That's the point.
Saying.
Yeah. So, you know, let's not just hate on those who do want to take on a fixer upper just because it's when I played the game of life, which I'm sure is sitting on this this thing behind me. I was like, yeah, give me the crappiest house. I don't care. I'm not actually living in it. I'm playing the game of life. Anyway,
that was 15 minutes on Cody Bellinger.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, no. OK, fine. Orioles, Mariners, let's move them aside. Where do you actually want him to go? If you get you can put Cody Bellinger on a team.
I would probably say the Kiwoom Heroes in the Korean baseball league.
I could also see him still sucking there just because of like the problems that Cody Bellinger's dealing with. But no, it's true. Okay.
What's like a good spot? Like what are the best parts of Cody Bellinger are the highlights? Because if he's in the Dodgers, we would have to, in theory, watch a lot of him because the Dodgers are important and you have to watch them all the time. I would not like to have to watch him live. I would like Cody Bellinger highlights.
Tampa?
Sent to me. Tampa, Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado's a good one.
Is a decent fit. Just Cincinnati, somewhere he can just do his thing.
And yes.
We talked about this with Joey Gallo.
Bring me, yeah. Gallo, this is funny too, right? Now you have teams trying to decide between Gallo and Bellinger. It's like you were focusing your reclamation project energy on Gallo, and now Bellinger hits the market as well. All right, a couple other pieces of news that we wanted to touch on. Some more. So do you want to do Verlander first? Let's do Verlander. Okay, so Justin Verlander, this isn't really news, but Justin Verlander is a free agent. He was not non-tendered. He's a regular free agent. We're starting to get little notes about, okay, all right. So we know that Jim Crane is essentially running the Astros. We assume he's going to try to get back and get Verlander back in Houston. But other teams are like, hey, whoa, this guy just won the Cy Young unanimously, even though he's going to be 40. Sounds good to me. You know, one of the best pitchers of all time. Sounds like the Mets are in the mix. We got a report from Ken Rosenthal with a great simple detail that they recently spoke with Mr. Verlander by Zoom. You ever heard of a Zoom? Are you familiar with this Zoom?
Yes, thing? I'm on it literally as we speak. What I like about this is we get so much fucking nothing all winter.
We sure do.
We get rumors of teams having interest in or
might
checking.
Have interest.
Checking in on, have spoken with. But what I love about this report is the specificity of it. The idea that the Mets reached out, probably through Justin's agent, and said, do you have a sec to hop on a Zoom? It is the most relatable thing Justin Verlander has ever done.
Oh, I see.
Hop on a Zoom.
Right.
He sat down, presumably at his computer, and he went to his email, and he clicked on a Zoom link, and he couldn't find it. And the time was weird, and they couldn't let him in. And then Justin Verlander presumably opened the link, mm-hmm. and Steve Cohen tried to introduce himself, but it was muted. Mm-hmm. And so someone had to be like, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
You're muted.
Steve.
It's Justin Verlander.
So
Justin Verlander changed his background to something goofy.
Mm-hmm.
Just the idea of who was on the Zoom, what was said.
That's also when I see a sentence, the Mets spoke with Verlander by Zoom. And that could just mean so many things. That could mean so many things. I mean, are we zooming in the whole, you know, active roster? Like, are we, I would assume this has to be up. Or does it include Steve Cohen? I don't know.
Does it include Steve Cohen? Absolutely.
Yes, probably. If it's Verlander, I think absolutely. I don't know if Steve Cohen's meeting with every free agent, but I think you're probably right. My thinking is, I think you're giving him too much credit. I think that his agent's sending him the link and he's opening up on his phone. There's no way he's opening up his email. He's pulling up, sorting through his inboxes. Think about how much is in Justin Verlander's email that he's sorting through. There's no shot he's opening in his email on his desktop. No chance. I think he's on his car. Well, how do baseball players zoom in? On their phone in the car. That's come on.
Yeah.
We know that. We know that from experience. That is 100% where Verlander did this. Because again, he's Justin Verlander. It's not like he has to impress anybody. He can show. He can be sitting on the toilet for all he cares. They're still going to want to give him $40 million.
But there's nothing Justin Verlander could have done on that Zoom to preclude Steve Cohen from being like, that's not the guy.
Exactly.
Let's think about this quickly. Mm-hmm. Verlander on the Mets would mean no DeGrom on the Mets, almost certainly.
Oh, Jesus.
Although, do they could go DeGrom, Scherzer, Verlander?
I think even though we keep saying that this there is no limit for Uncle Stevie, I would imagine yes. That would this seems like a very obvious DeGrom signs with Texas. We sign Verlander the next day.
Can I introduce you to my three starter, Max Scherzer? Yeah.
That's the other thing. Who I guess so Verlander and Scherzer, what do we sense that their relationship is? Of course, teammates back in Detroit long ago. They don't see I don't sense that they bond in the same way that probably Verlander and Gerrit Cole did in Houston, right? Like if Verlander signs with the Yankees, I could see a lot being like, look at these two. They will feed off each other, whatever. Scherzer seems like a little bit less likely. I don't really recall their days in Detroit in any sort of interpersonal level. But yeah, no, that'd be a hell of a flex to I don't know who you start on an opening day. I think it's Max is the incumbent, especially if DeGrom's gone.
Oh, between Verlander and Scherzer?
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
I don't know.
This Verlander is and Scherzer together on the same team does seem like it could be a little bit of like a pick contest.
Because that's more interesting than people try to make the Scherzer. DeGrom is there's no personality there to like to become controversial or to butt heads with Max. Like yeah, like they show them sitting next to each other during every Mets game, but it's like yeah, okay, those are the two greatest pitchers of all time. But I'm not personality wise, I'm not interested in that at all.
No,
Verlander Scherzer would be a lot more interesting.
Him on that team would be very interesting. But I think it is notable that they're zooming just because. It reaffirms my belief that the Mets will end up with one of these three aces, mm-hmm. Rodon, mm-hmm. Verlander, or
DeGrom
at the end of the winter. Because they need them. Their number two starter right now is Carlos Carrasco, and their number three starter right now is Eliezer Hernandez, who they just traded.
Well, and they're currently building their bullpen on waivers after giving Edwin Diaz $100 million. So yeah, no, I agree. They got a lot of
I actually got an email.
About
being in the Mets bullpen.
You're in the. They're going to do an open tryout.
Jordan, it's going to be like in what was that movie? Not Inception. Not Invictus. Invincible. The Vince Papale Eagles football movie where he tries out for the Eagles.
Invictus. That was definitely Invictus.
They're going to do that with the Mets bullpen. It's like, hey, did you live
down.
In New York?
Come on down to Flushing. Yeah, come to Williamsburg.
You can
go to the softball fields of Williamsburg.
You could be our new Colin Holderman. All right.
Which, by the way, hey, quick note. Someone's going to like signing Seth Lugo. That dude's good. I don't know why the Mets aren't just like, oh, let's just bring Seth Lugo back. Seth Lugo's great.
There was the moment in their last game where he like went out to the field and took one last look.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, dude, just bring Seth Lugo back. How much could that possibly cost?
That's where Steve Cohen draws the line.
It's like, what? Like, Seth Lugo's great. Anyway, okay, that's Verlander and the Mets. One other actual transaction we wanted to mention was the Angels swinging a deal for Gio Urshela. This was, I believe, the first ever trade broken on Instagram, courtesy of Jeff Passan. He said, click on this link. I said, I'm not falling for that, Jet Passan, Mr. NFT scammer. And I was like, oh, no, that's actually Jeff. I guess I'll click on this Instagram link. And yeah, the Angels traded for Gio Urshela.
Let's talk about that first. Let's talk about the news being broken on Instagram. Unless you live under a rock, you know that Twitter...
precarious position.
Not looking good. Twitter is in the hospital, is what I would say. It is not dead. It might not even be dying, but you know when you hear like a celebrity dies and a couple months before they're like, oh, well, they're not doing great. That's where Twitter is at right now.
It's that, or it's like in a movie when someone is in the hospital and there's a lot beeping, right? It's like, and the nurses are like trying to scramble and like figure out what the hell's going
what's
on. Now,
beeping?
In this case, we sort of know what's going on. Anyway, point
people
is...
People are leaving. We have lost...
People are certainly leaving.
I was going to say, we have lost what? Like
at least 500, 600 followers in like a week?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Which maybe, I don't know, maybe people don't like... Maybe we've been putting out some bad tweets. It feels like it's more of a larger context. Anyway.
But people are preparing for the worst. And what part of that means is, hey, there are other social media sites that aren't breaking. Yeah. And we could do things over there. And it is interesting to see Jeff Passan, the newsbreaker of all newsbreakers. Twitter has become the home for breaking news. It is where you do this. It has become such a quintessential part of sports media and sports journalism. And to see Jeff, I mean, it's the perfect level of trade to get people to go to Instagram. Jeff could not have done this with the Aaron Judge signing. Can you imagine if Jeff
was like... Well, it would have been a hell of a move. That's the thing, because it did feel like he didn't feel compelled, even if we all think Twitter's going to break any second, he didn't feel compelled to actually put it on Twitter in the way that, to your point, a bigger signing. He's like, I'm not going to waste a possible tweet with, you know, 5,000 likes in 30 seconds to put it on Instagram. But in this case, Gio Urshela to the Angels.
Perfect.
It's so perfect. Classic Angels.
Do you think
two
questions. Does the fact that this was the first trade broken on Instagram, does that make its way into Gio Urshela's Wikipedia page? And two, is Urshela asked about it at some point during the season?
Maybe to the first question, no to the second question. I mean, I guess if Twitter actually did, no, I think maybe to the first question, but
Gio's,
asking players about how he's probably like, yeah, that's how I found out on Instagram. What the fuck, Derek Falvey? Like, why am I scrolling on Instagram? That's the other thing. More players are on Instagram. Players are maybe more likely to find out about their trades on Instagram versus on Twitter. So that's an interesting dynamic that maybe we will see play out over the next couple of months. Hopefully not. Anyway, the actual trade baseball-wise, I mean, this is the Angels have not done this for 5 years in a row. We're not going to make any actual huge signings besides, you know, Rendon and Ohtani. We're just going to sign guys for 1 year. I know they gave Tyler Anderson 3 years, but like, let's just get a bunch of middling guys so that it's stars and, you know, middling guys and scrubs, and then maybe we'll have a winning season. Hasn't worked yet. Now, here's the thing. It seems like they're going to just play him at shortstop, which is pretty wild. We know Gio has played shortstop in the big leagues before, somewhat passably. So part of me is like, you know what? That's kind of creative. But is this the best option? Should the Angels just sign one of the shortstops? Probably. They're not going to do that. They're not going to make that kind of commitment in their offseason influx. I do like, though, that they are doing what I expected, which is not trade Ohtani and try, even if I don't think it's going to work.
I think this is it, man. I think this is the move that tips the scales. I think Gio Urshela playing shortstop is going to bring the Angels over the hump, finally.
Yeah. All right.
This is the move
finally
that makes me believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see about that. It was Phil Nevin and Marcus Thames. They love Gio for the time with the Yankees. All right. Like, that's fine. By the way, Gio was awesome. I really like Gio Urshela, so this honestly makes me kind of sad because I don't like players that I like going to the Angels, but it's fine. It's creative. Do I think it's the best option? No, but hey, it's a trade.
Creativity points.
If anything, I'm kind of more curious about it from the Twins angle because Gio Urshela was a good player for them last year, and I don't know what the plan is there moving forward. All right. I think that's it for news. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with some mailbag questions and our new segment, Celebrating Baseball of Yesteryear.
Negro Leagues Baseball Museum President Bob Kendrick hosts the SiriusXM original podcast, Black Diamonds.
The Negro Leagues didn't care what color you were, and they didn't care what gender you were. Can you play?
Hear stories of the leagues and legends that shaped sport, culture, and society.
That's why the museum is so important. It's like, we are never going to forget you.
Episodes of the award-winning Black Diamonds are now available wherever you get your podcasts.
We're not talking about balls and strikes. We're talking about your life.
And we are back here on Baseball Barbacast. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And we are sitting in my parents' basement recording this podcast. We are both home in the D.C. area for Thanksgiving. Jordan, before we hop back into the baseball world, take a little gander around my parents' basement. Yeah. What stands out to you? What are some items that you see that are notable, that illicit joy or thoughts in your mind?
It's an easy answer. It's the Plinko board that we named Peter Pachinko. We're showing it. I mean, who knows if we're going to have this clip. But if you followed our work at MLB.com at Cut4, we had a Plinko board that we named Peter Pachinko that we would put a bunch of different options at the bottom, whether it was usually to predict the postseason or predict where free agents would go or where trades would happen. And we would, you know, put the little the piece at the top, and it would come down, and that was our version of predicting things. And our greatest, probably the best content we've ever made that we don't bring up all the time is the fact that we had Peter Pachinko predict the entire 2018 postseason, and he nailed it. Every single, he literally got every, and we should tweet the video back out because we did at some point. Again, if Twitter's still around.
He got every round correct.
He did not miss one prediction.
He doesn't miss.
He doesn't miss. You know those like, oh, this turtle in Uruguay is going to pick the winner of the World Cup. And they have him like kind of scoot towards one of the soccer balls. That dude's got nothing on Peter Pachinko. And so to see this board, this, I don't know why it's here, but I guess it's better here than in the trash, just gives me a lot of joy. So thanks for asking. And what about you? I mean, this is your basement, not mine. Is there anything around here that gives you joy?
No,
you, Jordan. Okay, thanks, man. All right, let's get to the mailbag. We're going to do three questions, or I don't know, these aren't necessarily all questions. I guess these are all questions. Again, you can email us baseballbarbacast@gmail.com, barbcast@gmail.com. And we got a couple good ones here. So keep them coming because we're going to try to be way more consistent about this in the off season to be diving into the mailbag. So let's begin with an email from Ian.
Ian says hello. Hello. The title of his email is mailbag question, which is true.
I got my attention.
Nailed it. Hello. First time, long time. I'm actually not sure whether this is a good mailbag question or like I would love to read an article about it. During the Phillies run, you mentioned a few times that Bryson Stott does not drink and would still be the life of the party during celebrations and such. That story/anecdote piqued my interest about how players and coaches who avoid alcohol navigate playoff celebrations that seem to revolve around alcohol. To be more specific, if a player or coach is an alcoholic, what do they do? I just feel like that has to happen occasionally, and it feels like an important thing to consider, and I am curious. Thanks, Ian. Great question.
This is part I would of also why, like to read an article about it.
This is part of why they don't play the World Cup or the World Series in Qatar. Because yes,
this is the only reason.
The 2022 Phillies would have had an awful time in Doha.
That's very true. And you know, I mean, but hey, the weather's not that bad there right now. I mean, you could play in this.
You could play in this.
Could play the regular season, that's for sure.
Warmer than the bank. Really interesting question. I had my first champagne locker room celebration experience this postseason, and there were a number of the important thing to understand is that not everybody, not all 26 players are in the middle of the room the whole time getting after it. There are players who kind of stand on the outside. There are at least like 30 other club staff members between coaches, trainers, mm-hmm. nutritionists, front office people, you know, the president of marketing or whatever,
yeah.
who are in the room too, standing on the sides, just like having a beer, clinking it up. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll often see the players kind of filter back. The best way to think about it is kind of like a wedding where there's the dance floor and then there are the people having conversations elsewhere in the wedding on the side. Mm-hmm. And the focus and the life of the wedding and all the pictures that you're going to see
is going to be in the dance video floor.
Is going to be in the dance
that
floor.
Doesn't mean everyone's on a dance floor.
Bingo. And there are players who don't like to be around alcohol will just not drink it. Now, there's two different levels of that. There are the players who don't drink and are fine having drinks poured on them. Mm-hmm. And that is Stott. Mm-hmm. And that is Bryce Harper, mm-hmm. who also I believe does not drink. At least people have never seen him drink.
Yeah.
In the locker room. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who don't even get in there. And I believe that's what happened with CC Sabathia mm-hmm. at the end of his Yankees tenure after he had kind of had his very public battle with alcoholism. Mm-hmm. I think he just kind of abstained mm-hmm. from that. I think the similar thing happened with Josh Hamilton mm-hmm. with the Rangers mm-hmm. where they had like Martinelli's apple cider or they yes. took measures to make sure that he was not uncomfortable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this is something that I think has been, maybe not a full article about this, but this has been an issue that has happened in the past. We're not any sort of experts on alcoholism and how situated, this is a unique situation that normally you wouldn't be thrust into in the same kind of way. But it's, of course, it's also undeniably, it's a cause of celebration. And it's not like the players don't realize that they're having a great time too. So yeah, I think I'm sure it's a balance. And I'm also sure that it is something that the club is right. very prepared for. It's not going to take them, catch them off guard if there are players in that situation.
From an alcoholism perspective, I know that, part of it is being around people who are drinking and making that makes you want to have a drink. Mm-hmm. Now, I imagine that usually is like seeing someone sip an old fashioned, not pour an entire can of Budweiser down someone's shirt.
Normal alcohol consumption situation. No, it's a good question,
though. But I did see Blake Snell just chugging water. I will say during their celebration, I don't believe Blake Snell drinks. Mm-hmm. Oops. Drop my water bottle. I don't believe Blake Snell drinks, but he was hammering agua during the Padres celebration against
him. Getting real hydrated.
It's
good. Good for Blake Snell. All right, let's move on to this next question. This one comes from Sean. This is a good offseason one. Sean says, we all love bad jersey swaps by desperate fans. Do we? So my question is, which single player has been badly jersey swapped onto which single team that they have never played for the most? My pick is Bryce Harper in a Yankees jersey. Thanks, Sean.
Now, when he says jersey swap, when I first read this, I thought he meant like exchanging
jerseys. The post game, like, you know, holding it up, like, all right, here. Which really doesn't happen in baseball nearly as much as in other sports. Although I feel like it happens kind of more behind the scenes, right? Football and basketball, they're doing it post game immediately. You see it all the time. Baseball, you're not meeting on the field after the game. That does not happen, at least in major league, professional baseball. You maybe sometimes see it in the minors, but you would never see it in the big leagues.
Let's talk about this, actually, because
before we get to his actual question.
You know when you see tweets from people who are like, this idea that they do in other sports, why don't we do this in baseball? This is part of why the game is dying. We need to, you know, I saw one of these about jersey swaps. Yeah. I don't think that fans seeing a picture of Pablo Lopez and Chris Bassett giving each other a sweaty uniform after the game is going to save baseball, or that baseball is dying to begin.
Also, this does still happen. Like, this is a very common, you know, certainly like the future Hall of Famers are constantly being asked, so Albert Pujols, give me a semi jersey. There was a great one this year with Julio Rodriguez and Aaron Judge when the Yankees were in Seattle. That was pregame. Right. But the sweaty, like, let's take the photo after, you know, we literally just came off, said good game, here's my jersey. This is not going to happen.
There's so many games.
that too.
You know, you can't just go through 162 jerseys.
Right.
But I think you're very correct that it is the lack of proximity on the field after a game. Right. Yeah.
You don't
basketball, game's over. You do the handshakes. Everyone's mingling on the court.
Yes.
Football, everyone's
same thing
on the field. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about hockey. Soccer is the same. Everyone's in the middle of the pitch, right?
Yeah.
There's the proximity aspect to it.
We don't get that. You leave. You lose, you leave. In baseball.
Oh, you lost? Go home.
Get out of there. All right. But anyway, it's actual question. In terms of bad Photoshops, which, you know, you're very familiar with, Bryce Harper and Yankees one is a great one. Now, we're not getting those really anymore because he signed you a long-term deal. So who's a candidate for this? Who are we seeing the most currently right now in the most uniforms? First place, Ohtani, Juan Soto, for sure. And I think we're going to keep getting Juan Soto ones until he signs an extension with the Padres.
To me, Juan Soto to the Mets.
Yeah, Juan Soto Mets even more than Juan Soto Yankees. This is the other thing, is that you would never see Mets ones until Steve Cohen bought the team. And now, to the same degree, now it's like, oh, we could get anybody. Like, this is great. You're going to put anybody in free agency. So now we put everyone in Mets jersey.
It's the future Yankee mentality, right? Everyone's just a future Yankee. In.
And it might be more realistic now for Mets than Yankees.
But you need a fan base who, needs the Photoshop. And it comes down to who's making the Photoshop. Because there are the Photoshops done by the accounts just trying to suck up RTs. Mm,
yeah.
Right?
True.
Which is just ubiquitous at this point. Yeah. Like our employer, mm-hmm. Fox Sports, posted one of Anthony Rizzo in an Astros jersey for some reason. And it's like, yeah, it's the easiest freaking RT.
People will retweet and tweet angrily. Like, that's what they want you to do.
You can put anyone in any other uniform and it'll get RTs. I could put Cesar Hernandez in a Reds uniform. It'd be like, thinking emoji. And people would be like, yes. Bring him home.
That's what we need more of, right? We need more of like the lower tier. Like, here, let's see who's just like Cesar Hernandez is honestly a perfect example. It's like, all right, Eric Fetty was just not tendered. Like, let's just see some Eric Fetty Royals jersey swaps.
That's the
people
thing.
Are gonna go crazy.
Yankees fans, in some ways, they don't maybe need the Photoshops to the same extent because they are
people have already
they think they're like above
them.
It right they
oh, can that's true.
Yankees fans don't need to create a visual representation of their hopes and dreams. because they believe that Vlad Jr. will be on the Yankees one day. They don't need to create that. That's a great point. Well,
maybe not anymore, but Photoshop. But yes. This is actually a good transition to our last mailbag question, because I think this next team is also one that we are seeing a lot of. This email comes from Michael. Michael, the title of the email is "You Asked for a Poem," which I do think we did. I think we said, send us your poems, send us your haikus, send us your ballads, your whatevers. And he sent us a nice little haiku here from Michael. Offseason is sad. Favorite players leave teams. Do the Cubs have hope? Love the pod in all its iterations.
I have to say something to Michael.
Yeah.
Michael, I don't know if you know this, but all of your favorite players left during the season. They were all traded at the deadline.
They've left over the last few years. That's the thing. Your favorite players have already left the teams for sure.
But his players did not leave during the offseason.
That's
for
true.
Him, it should be August is very that's true. Sad.
that's a good point. Yeah. July 31st at 4:30 PM is a really sad time. I just want to use this excuse to talk about the Cubs, because I don't think we've talked about the Cubs much. This offseason we did on the team preview, and you know, combining it with this last email, like the Cubs fans right now are in a very, there is no team, I think, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, I'm not more desperate to sign an amazing player than the Cubs. And I feel like this was true last offseason too, but it was clear they were still focusing on going backwards. Now that they've officially, essentially cleaned house on everyone from 2016, yeah, they have. There's no one left.
Kyle Hendricks.
Kyle Hendricks is left. That's true. Ian Happ was there after, so he doesn't even count. They now seem ready to go forward. We don't know how much they want to go forward. But because they're the Cubs and not the Orioles, you know, respectfully,
nope.
You've seen them sign giant free agents before. And so they are thinking, let's do it. Let's just sign Carlos Correa. Let's sign Cody. I mean, you know, they got Suzuki last year, but let's sign Sango. Let's sign DeGrom. Let's do these things. And they are clearly the fan base just living on the edge of every single possible rumor connecting them to a top free agent. And I respect it. I appreciate it. And honestly, I for Michael and for the other Cubs fans, I do hope they get one of them. Do I think they're going to contend next year? No, because I think they're a long way away. But I really hope that, because this is... They're hopeful. They're trending in the right direction. The farm system is built up. Like I generally trust Jed, and they got some new player development in there. But they are the thirstiest. I truly think they are the thirstiest fan base this offseason for a big name free agent. I really do believe that.
I think they should be.
Yeah.
Because you ask if they have hope, and they do. And that's because this division sucks. Yeah. The NL Central is wreckage right now. And to me, I think the Cubs could compete next year if they spent money. If they wanted to push the payroll up to like $220 million, they could easily compete next year.
Yeah.
And they should be able to. If you're running a payroll that high, which the Cubs should be doing.
Obviously can, right.
Obviously can.
I don't know what it got up to in their peak.
I mean, the money that they have committed, it's Stroman, Suzuki, one more year of Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, what's their payroll at right now? Like 120?
127. Like they could get up to 200 easy. Yeah. That team's making hand over fist from all random buildings.
People
are
still going. That's the other thing. They sucked last year, and there are still people showing up, which we love. That's the best thing about Cubs fans. We love that. But
this team is not that bad. Like Suzuki, Horner, Happ are good players on World Series teams, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think Horner is the real deal.
Yeah, no, I'm in on Horner.
Now, beyond that, it's pretty light. And the rotation in particular, like behind Stroman and Hendricks is like,
pitching's not good. I like Justin Steele. Yeah.
Justin Steele's fine.
Yep.
There's enough there that you should be able to field a team. And if not now, when? Because the Pirates are eventually going to get okay. Mm-hmm. And the Reds are going to get okay again. And the Brewers are... You're in this lull.
This is a good NL Central time to jump back up into the mix.
Now's the time to pay.
Yeah.
With this market?
Yes.
This free agent market?
Yes.
With the money that you have to spend? Mm-hmm. With this division not being good? Go do it. Like, they could just sign 8 players and immediately be competitive.
Right. And look, you could say the same thing about the Orioles. And not that they haven't run... I know Michael Bauman just wrote this piece on Fangraphs being like, what if the Orioles just had a $220 million payroll? The Cubs don't have that much wiggle room, but also they have a way more consistent history of spending a lot. And so, particularly in free agency. And so, yeah, I think they should. So do they have hope? I think yes, but they are desperate for our friends at Bleacher Nation. Oh man, they are just dying for anything right now. All right. That is a mailbag. Again, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. And now we are going to introduce a new segment, and this is going to be the end of our show today. For those of us, those of you, I guess, us who listened and did the Barbacast in its original rendition back in our days in college, we loved to talk about baseball a long, long time ago, particularly funny baseball names a long, long time ago. And we did something called the BREF Battle, where Jake and I, every week, would go into the annals of baseball reference and find the funniest possible names that we could. And this is, we're digging deep. This is, they didn't even have to be major leaguers. We were going deep into the baseball reference, the basement of baseball reference, to find these names. And we would introduce them. We would talk about them. What we found is not just that their names were funny, but that their lives were funny, because the world was very different 100 years ago. And so instead of just focusing on the funny names now, what we would like to do is introduce a new segment that allows us to celebrate this time in history. What are we officially calling this segment?
I would like to call it Hardball Mad Libs.
Okay, great. Old-timey, whatever. The point is Mad Libs is the key here.
Deadball Mad Libs.
Deadball Mad Libs. That's perfect. Deadball Mad Libs. And the way that this is going to work is, usually Jake, although I would love to participate at some point, Jake has, I believe, selected a player and the career of a player, or some portion of a player, of which I believe you'll be reading from his either Wikipedia page or his Sabre page.
Correct.
And at certain points in the story, Jake will stop and ask me to guess what...
To complete the sentence.
To complete the sentence, okay? Now, do I get to know who the player is before we begin?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So we're going to try this out again. This is a dry... We did a dry run before we recorded, or a few weeks ago. I have not heard anything about this. This is not rehearsed at all. So we're going to see how this goes, and we're going to have a good time, and then we're gonna say goodbye. So here we go. Our first ever Dead Ball Mad Lib. Jake, who are we learning about today?
Jordan, are you ready to talk about pussy?
bring it on. Pussy Thibault? Are we talking about
Pussy Thibault?
All right. When did Pussy Thibault play? Wait, wasn't there also... go ahead. Spoilers. I'm remembering too much. Pussy Thibault was definitely on a BREF battle at some point. Okay, so tell me.
For the first time on this pod, we're going to talk about pussy.
I'm ready.
Pussy Thibault... Sorry, I'm reading from a Sabre page written by a gentleman named Brian McKenna.
Thank you, Brian.
Pussy Thibault made the most of his brief baseball career, appearing in only two games in the majors for the Cleveland Spiders, even though he played just two abbreviated seasons. Charles Alston Thibault was born in Worcester, Massachusetts on February 22nd, 1870. His father may have... His father may have...
I have no idea.
His father may have been...
I don't know. What? This is a tough place to start. May have been a... I have no idea. Go ahead.
His father may have been born in France.
He could have been so many things.
Okay. I know. I left it open for you. Pussy Thibault grew up in New England and was playing in New England, doing things in New England, being in New England.
Charles is his real name.
Charles, but you know, it's unclear. This is what will not become clear. We don't know why people called him Pussy.
Oh, okay.
Now,
it's not going to be part of this mystery.
No. I have theories
okay.
as to why people called him that, but they're unfounded and I'm not going to.
Every between the lines.
Yeah. So he's playing in New England and he gets sold to Portland at a tryout. But instead of going to Portland, he gets on a train and heads to Cleveland instead.
Okay.
Instead, he caught a train for Cleveland on July 11th and Thibault joined his namesakes, the brothers George and Patsy Thibault, on the Cleveland Spiders. Charles was not related to the brothers, if some have said. Some speculated that Pussy was brought in by Patsy, Cleveland's manager, in order to
field a team, to have enough players to be in the league.
In order to confuse opposing managers with a lineup full of several ambiguous Thibaults, Patsy could potentially list one, two, or three Thibaults on his lineup card and later decide which of the three to play or bat in a specific order.
So here's what I'm thinking is...
So basically, he just wrote Thibault and didn't signify which one was going to play. And then they were like, which guy? And you'd be like, oh, you're throwing lefty.
Oh, really? Matchup shenanigans? It seems like He had George and Patsy Thibault already. And when Charles Thibault showed up, he was like, I need another P Thibault. And so you're going to be Pussy Thibault.
Well, actually, we do have some insight here. At the time, the national newspapers identified Charles as C.A. Thibault, which highlights his initials as
Charles Alston.
Oh. Thibault. C-A-T.
Oh, okay.
Cat.
Cat. He was Cat.
Girly.
Oh,
he was Cat. And they called him Pussy.
Oh, he was, okay. I'm seeing it.
That's really creative.
I was going to say, no, but this is what they were so good at, these newspapers, you know, 100 years ago.
All they did was nicknames also, and racism at the newspapers.
That was those were their two specialties.
That was their bag.
What? This is late 1890s, right?
Yeah.
Spiders? Okay, yeah.
So he plays two games for the Spiders.
So he didn't even get to use this multiple Thibault strategy.
Because Portland's manager saw Thibault's name in the newspapers on the morning of July 23rd playing in the National League with the Spiders. He immediately suspended the player and filed a grievance with the National League as he had already filed Thibault's contract with league president Nick Young. So Thibault had agreed to a deal with a team in Portland, Maine, got on a train and fled to Cleveland,
and then
he was two-timing a team. he had like two families,
yes,
at the same time. And the first manager read about it in the newspaper. Right.
He told the Portland manager, like, "Yeah, I'll be there for sure. No problem.
Can you give me like a day or two?
I'll be there. Just maybe not Monday, Tuesday. I'll definitely be there for that game.
I have to go play for this other team. Paternity leave."
And then he opens up the newspaper. He's like, "This guy's in Cleveland." Okay.
The arguments dragged out between the two teams into August, but eventually Cleveland's Patsy Thibault was forced to relinquish the rights to Pussy. He did so bitterly, declaring that the player, quote,
that the player had deceived him, and thus it was not his fault. He was basically trying to get out of this.
He did so bitterly, declaring that the player, quote, isn't much good anyway.
Oh, that makes more sense. He's like, ah, screw him. We don't need this. Go back to Portland.
Amazing. You sign this guy only for his last name.
Plays two games. You're like, this guy sucks. This isn't going to work.
Wait, maybe we shouldn't build a roster around people's last names. It's team being like, oh, Jose Ramirez? We got to find another Ramirez so we can confuse the Twins
in there as soon as possible.
In the final preseason game the following year, Thibault was
injured.
Beaned.
Yep. Okay.
And was not beaned up, mind you, just beaned, and was unconscious for more than 15 minutes.
Oh, geez.
The game was called after the incident. He was in the hospital for more than 2 weeks. A hearty 5'10" tall and 175 pounds.
That's huge in 1899.
That's like Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
He had lost.
Oh, he lost his vision.
25 pounds by the time he was released from the hospital.
Oh, no. Yikes. This is awful.
Never appeared in a regular season game for Portland and was released in the middle of June. His baseball career came to an end, and he supported his family as a?
As a, this is, I mean, this mailman.
Machinist.
Okay.
An occupation he took up while still in his teens. He worked for many years for General Electric before retiring in 1933. Pussy was active in Democratic politics as a councilman and alderman, representing Pittsfield, Massachusetts,
nice.
As Ward 3.
Nice. Western
a member
Mass.
Of the city's Board of Health from 1920 to 1926.
Board of Health. All right. Okay.
Which is, you know, I mean, this guy lost 25 pounds.
I was going to say, I don't know. But maybe he went through it. Now he knows what to recommend other people.
Pussy died at his longtime residence, 125 Newell Street.
Oh, just check it out. Let's hit it up on Google Earth.
Sabres just doxing Pussy Thibault. In Pittsfield.
Doxing someone. Oh, in Pittsfield.
You died in Pittsfield.
I've been to Pittsfield. I should have gone and check it out. Okay.
March 25th, 1950, at the age of 80, after
19, he made it to 1950.
He died at 80.
That's incredible. After about with X.
Nope, just says long illness.
Oh, long That's illness.
Okay. He's buried in the local St. Joseph Cemetery. That is the story of Pussy Drun. They told me about this in high school sex ed class. It's very different than I remember.
I was going to say. Also, this is really a tough look for who is the manager, the manager of the Spiders. This says a lot about the Spiders. Oh, it was literally Patsy. He was already a Thibault. They wanted to bring in another Thibault. Yeah, that's insane. Cleveland Spiders were just a mess.
I mean, Patsy and Pussy Thibault were not related.
We're not related. Well, again, it was just, it was Patsy and George Tebow, or sorry, Charles Tebow. And then he made him a pussy.
He
made him a pussy. All right. That's going to be our first dead ball Mad Lib. This was good.
I can't stop laughing about the idea of like the GM of a team just sitting around like, all right, how can we improve this team? And one guy's like, what if we got a left-handed batsman?
Here's
and
the
other guy's like, what if we got someone with the same last name as me?
Right. But I'm thinking more about the Portland GM or manager or whatever. Because the what is the most realistic? This is my last question, then we'll be done. What is the most realistic way that that could happen in baseball today? To me, it's winter league. To me, it's like I'm a GM of a Lee Dome team, and it's like I got this pitcher in Mexico who's going to come in and start for us on Wednesday, and then you open up Twitter on Tuesday night and you see him pitching in Venezuela, and you're just like, what? Like, this guy's supposed to start for me tomorrow.
The better way is JUCO baseball, where you're a JUCO junior college coach and you have a kid you're bringing in for the fall, and he's verbally committed, and you're like, you classes are all squared away, and he's like, classes are all squared away, and then you open up Twitter and there he is just hitting for like LSU and fall ball.
Man, that's true. Or the other, there's a lot of different ways we could go. Anyway, all right, that's our first ever Dead Ball Mad Libs. Is a very, very strong start.
Finally,
we will try.
I taught Jordan about pussy. Yeah. Finally, he knows.
Never mind. All right, we'll cut it here. Thank you all for listening to another edition of Baseball Barbacast, the old school parents basement edition. We will be back later this week with some more bonus content, even though it's Thanksgiving. So stay tuned for that. But thank you all for listening. We will see what more news we have next week. Good luck. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing this. Even he's not here in the in Jake's basement, but he is here on Zoom with Justin Verlander, is also here on the Zoom. So thank you for listening. we will be back soon. And baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Hit us up.
Check out Racco Plus.
SiriusXM Podcasts.